I think I'm going to try to situate my comments. I mean, there's so much one could say about Haiti. I mean, for many people, it's entered their consciousness in Canada because of the earthquake, and people are unaware of how profoundly important Haiti's history is for understanding anything about this hemisphere, anything about the countries which historically have been tied together by their origins and twin processes of colonial expansion in the Americas and enslavement. Haiti is incredibly significant. And in many ways, I think that what's happening now, and this is one of the things that's getting lost in the language of sort of humanitarianism that surrounds the earthquake, is that there are fundamental questions of justice and sort of economic distribution of justice, in a sense, that are at play in Haiti right now that have long-term significance. The events surrounding this earthquake and the kinds of responses that we're seeing a real struggle over, in many ways, what kind of future is being imagined for us and which we would imagine for ourselves. And that is obviously something of relevance beyond Haiti. So I want to focus today on the role of foreign governments, foreign aid agencies, and NGOs in Haiti. Not actually in the present moment. I think we'll talk a lot about that in the question and answer session. But to give you a sort of historical framework for how these kinds of agencies have shaped Haiti, and it does tie in with what you were saying earlier about some of the discourses in the media. And to say that fundamentally, the engagements of foreign governments, including the Canadian government, in projects of various kinds in Haiti has to be understood in always in political terms. It is not some sort of depoliticized landscape in which, it's just sort of going to help save people and so on. And it also has to be understood in the wider landscape of a hemisphere in which some countries have come to terms with their history of engagements with slavery and racism more than others. And part of the reason why particularly governments such as the United States, Canada, and France have treated Haiti and Haiti's people with such profound disrespect, frankly, over the years. It's a reflection of many of their own attitudes about their own internal histories of slavery and so on. So there's an externalization onto Haiti of unresolved conflicts and unresolved tensions that are also profoundly domestic ones. And that, I think, has to be understood as well. So, for people who don't know, Haiti's often this term, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, quote unquote. But I think it's more important to think of Haiti's poverty. Poverty doesn't just exist; it's created, and some people are poor because others are rich. And Haiti, the country that is now Haiti, in the 17th, late from the late from the late 17th through the 18th centuries, was actually one of the wealthiest colonies in the world, and the biggest importer of slaves in the Americas, and the biggest exporter of sugar in the French Empire. It was the wealthiest part of the French Empire for planters, for those who dominated that enslaved labor. And in 1791, in Haiti, enslaved people launched what became a revolution, a rebellion against slavery, and they aimed to emancipate themselves from slavery, and eventually, when France sought to reimpose slavery, they launched a revolution against French imperialism. Haiti became only the second independent country in this hemisphere after the United States. And it became independent under very particular kinds of circumstances. First of all, it was the only society in the Americas that completely repudiated slavery, and the only one in which literally the world had been turned upside down. The formerly most dispossessed people were now those in control of the state. And this happened, Haiti became an independent state in 1804. This happened in a world in which every other independent state with which Haiti had to deal was a slaveholding power, most of which had at some point either invaded Haiti or sought to undermine this rebellion. So countries such as the United States refused to recognize Haiti's independence until the United States itself abolished slavery in 1862 in order to get recognition by France. The Haitian government in 1825 had to pay an amount which was at that time the equivalent of 150 million francs in 1825 francs, which even today sounds like a lot of money. In today's dollars, that's the equivalent actually now, it's appreciated to $24 billion. It was about 21.6 in 2004. in order to get France to recognize Haiti's independence. And even then, a number of countries across the Atlantic world refused to deal with Haiti. So it's kind of useful to think of Haiti in the 19th century as a Cuba without the Soviet Union. There were no allies. There were no trading partners of any sort of consistency. And basically every other state with which Haiti had to deal was effectively an enemy state, or saw Haiti as an enemy state, because its leaders were black. That was the basic reason. They were black, they were former slaves, they had no business being in control of the country. And I think we have to think about foreign policy relations with Haiti. You know, they're the profound echoes of that kind of thinking, that sense that this place could not be forgiven for a revolution that in its day represented a fundamental overturning of every single hierarchy on which the world, as it was known at the time, was based, that it was never forgiven for that. And there was a clear policy at that time. I mean, these states could agree on very little else, these imperial states like France, Britain, the United States, and Spain, they could agree on very little else, but they all agreed that the Haitian independence project had to be a failure. Because if it was not a joke, if it was not a failure, well then, the possibility that these people, these dispossessed slaves and Africans, might be able to govern themselves. And what would be the implications of that be for a world based on slavery? So the echoes of that are still very powerful in attitudes towards Haiti. And yes, there are a number of immediate foreign policy concerns that have shaped Western attitudes towards Haiti. For example, the Cuban Revolution of 1959 is a very important one. Issues to do with immigration of Haitians to United States and so on. That's another important issue. But underneath all of that is this history rooted in a fundamental lack of belief that these people ever could govern themselves. That's at the root of this. So to turn then very specifically to how foreign governments and aid agencies have behaved in Haiti, I think it's very important not to sort of make blanket statements. And again, this is, a problem with a lot of the conversation about Haiti, is that it's sort of, I think there's a tendency in a lot of, certainly discourse in Canada, and I would say that even in some progressive circles, you do get this as well, to sort of look out at the world and see quote-unquote third world countries as basically interchangeable. And it's, you don't really have to know the details of the history to understand what's going on. And like, well, actually, you kind of do. It's not enough to have, again, good intentions, however progressive they may be. You actually do need to understand something about the place. And I think in Haiti, different kinds of aid organizations have functioned and governments have functioned in very different kinds of ways. One of the first things that particularly the Canadian government has tended to do is to remove Haiti from its sort of local context and try to break any sense of political connectedness between Haiti and all of its neighbors, right? And part of that has to do with this profound fear on the part of Western governments, again, Canada, France, the United States, of the potential of sort of regional, other kinds of regional cooperative efforts in the Caribbean and in the circum-Caribbean region that might be a challenge to hegemonic authority emanating from the North. And so at various points in the history of the Caribbean, wherever you have seen sort of populist movements that arise that have a very different perspective on what the sort of locus of power ought to be, there's a real attempt to isolate that popular struggle in one particular country from its broader regional context, to sort of cut it off and to sort of enforce a very unequal and unidirectional relationship with Northern authority, if you want to put it that way, the United States and Canada and so on. So with Haiti, there's a real way in which the discussion about Haiti is taken out of its regional context. So the fact that a lot of the kinds of issues that Haiti faces are actually regional issues about which there needs to be a regional conversation in the Caribbean, and the fact that Canada has been playing over the course of the 20th and early 21st century an increasingly important role as a financial player and as a power onto which sort of U.S. interests can be divested. So Canada as both an agent of its own interests in terms of the power of Canadian banks, Canadian finance, Canadian mining in the region, but also as an agent of U.S. authority in the region. So it's hard to have a regional conversation about that, about the role that Canada is playing in the region as a whole when you only isolate it to Haiti. And I think that's a conversation that does need to happen. We also need to talk about Canada's role, particularly since the early 2000s, again, in fostering a new kind of, and I think, neo-imperial discourse about Haiti. So in 2001, there was a conference held in Montreal at which the sort of new UN doctrine of the responsibility to protect, do you know this doctrine? This idea of that, you know, it's the responsibility of the so-called international community, which I think is another euphemistic term, because really international community ultimately refers, it's a euphemism largely for the West, with some allies to legitimate it, but ultimately, you know, that's what it is. You know, that basically that foreign governments have a responsibility to step in and prevent a state from failing, right? Which sounds an awful lot like imperial trusteeship to me, like this 19th century concept of imperial trusteeship, whereby a powerful Western or colonial state would have the right to go in and intervene or occupy sort of less civilized countries in the interests of maintaining political stability and ensuring civilization. This is a resurgence of that kind of language. So Canada held, that conference was held in Canada. It was organized by the Canadian government. And there's a clear reason for that. I mean, Canada was playing from that moment an increasingly important role in a new kind of imperial relationship with Haiti. And in that particular moment, opposition to the government of Jean-Bertrand de Hastide, right? So then we come to the current moment where, again, right after the earthquake, you have this big conference on the reconstruction of Haiti that's held in Montreal, where, again, as in 2001, the Haitian presence is there to legitimate a process that is really about the resurgence of Western authority. And, you know, the Canadian government, again, takes on this role as a kind of new sort of leader of Western interest in Haiti. And again, it's talked about specifically in the context of Haiti and taking it completely out of a wider regional context and wider regional concerns. So it's hard to see how foreign interest in Haiti is shaped by geopolitical concerns in the region. So what does, you know, a wider concern about issues like the relationship between Cuba and Venezuela have to do with Haiti? Well, actually, it has a lot to do with attitudes towards Haiti. What does concern about wider issues to do with the issue of transshipment of narcotics have to do with Haiti? Well, it has a lot to do with Haiti, right? So the sort of the failure of Western governments to actually either suppress these alternative visions of politics that the Cuban-Venezuelan alliance represents, or the failure of things like, you know, the war on drugs, those issues are not really talked about. But it's all sort of projected as some kind of, you know, failure, internal failure of the Haitian state. And the last point I want to talk about is, you know, Canada's role, again, specifically in propping up governments, you know, effectively illegitimate governments in Haiti, particularly in recent years. So Canada was one of three states that invaded, basically, carried out this coup against Jean-Bertrand d'Aristide in February of 2004. So February 29th, 2004, the elected president of Haiti was spirited out of the country to the Central African Republic by a unified force of American, Canadian, and French troops. That force was then replaced by a UN force called MINUSTA, which is the UN Stabilization Force. And basically, the UN Stabilization Force was composed of all of the countries which had upset the United States by refusing to go to Iraq, France and Canada among them. I kind of think of it as the other coalition of the willing. Literally, if you look at the list, I don't have it here, but if you look at the list of countries that went to Haiti in 2004, not a single one of those countries went to Iraq. So Haiti was used as a sort of makeup with the United States for this opposition to Iraq, and people and all of these countries supported precisely the kind of regime change in Haiti, and Aristide was a democratically elected leader, but they supported precisely the kind of regime change in Haiti that they had not supported in Iraq, right? So that's the first point.